This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. Busy day here on the station. The Moose and the Grand Rapids Griffins this afternoon. And then later tonight, of course, the Jets into Vegas to meet the Golden Knights alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
On Tuesday night, when the Jets return home, they will meet the New Jersey Devils for the second and final time this season. We're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Ken Danico, New Jersey Devils analyst, to talk about that matchup. Ken, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure, guys. Good morning.
Good morning, Ken. Obviously, the Devils are not off to the start that they wanted to be this year. Two victories so far in their first 11 games. You know, if you had to sort of disregard the record at this point in time, what would you point to from this Devils team as a positive that they can sort of build upon despite their on-ice struggles?
Well, they've certainly been in every game, and in fact, most of these games they've had a long home stretch. They've been leading, and we know the problems with closing games out. So they've gotten points in four of their last five games of really struggle in overtime and shootouts to manufacture a win. So the only thing you can say is they've got a real good offense as far as pretty balanced four lines, and they're creating a lot of opportunities for themselves, scoring some goals as of late. Have had a tough time keeping the puck out of the net. Last night was a heck of a hockey game. Both teams pretty evenly matched, both teams, the Flyers as well, played a good game, and it went back and forth, and unfortunately for the Devils, they lose that one in the shootout, and that's kind of been continuously happening. So for them, they just got to stay the course. They've, like I said, it's tough. Sometimes you get in these wrong side of a streak where you just can't find a way to win a hockey game. And yeah, do they have to defend leads better and make better puck decisions at times of the game and manage the score? But this league's a tough league to win hockey games. We know that. Every team has a lot of skill, a lot of talent, but they've done a lot of good things. And for large portions of games, they've outplayed their opponent. I mean, I look at a couple of games. Arizona, they outshoot them 35-18. They outchanced them, had a 2-0 lead, but unable to hold that lead. The goaltending has been a real struggle for the most part in a lot of these games. Last night, I thought Mackenzie Blackwood played a good game. Both goaltenders, young goaltenders, did. Carter Hart as well. But they just have not gotten the timely save. We know the importance of goaltending. I think these guys can get out of it. Mackenzie Blackwood's got a ton of potentially still a young goaltender, so there's going to be some ups and downs. And Corey Schneider's still trying to find his rhythm. I mean, sometimes I look at the game against Tampa Bay, and you lose that one as well in overtime, and they scored 7 goals and 23 shots. That doesn't happen too often. That's not to beat up on Corey, because there was deflections off his own teammates. There was seeing eye picture perfect shots by the Lightning, who have a lot of offensive weapons. I get that, but you just hope that obviously Corey would be the first to admit you can't let in 7 goals on 23 shots. So they're just clawing along here and really playing some pretty good hockey. Just the wins have not been coming just yet.
Ken, just sticking with the game last night, as you mentioned, a disappointing loss for the Devils, but, you know, that hit behind the net, Matt Niskanen behind the Flyers net, you know, hits Jack Hughes with a pretty good one, and then Kyle Palmieri comes in, drops the gloves, ends up getting the instigator penalty and gets kicked out of the game. But, you know, watching that game last night and, you know, doing the broadcast with Steve Cangelosi, were you liking seeing that from Kyle Palmieri, like sticking up for, you know, the first overall pick, the rookie? And did that kind of remind you of maybe when, you know, back in the day, somebody maybe roughed up Scott Gomez a little bit and you had to step in?
Well, first off, looking at the hit more and more, I mean, it was a relatively clean hit if you look at it, and that's part of the game. Originally, we thought it was a little bit high and maybe could have been a call along the way. But having said that, absolutely. I mean, it's a reactionary game, and in an instant, you have to you know, protect teammates and show that you're together, I believe. And then, there wasn't much of a fight, really. But it's just showing that you're going to be together. And certainly with the number one overall pick, you want to make sure at all costs he's not taken advantage of. But, you know, for Matt Niskanen, he's doing his job. It's a pretty, if we look at it again, it's a pretty good hit. You know, the timing of it, he was kind of turned right into him. And Niskanen was right there. But no question for me, you see it throughout the league. And I know the fighting is almost non-existent now in the game, but every once in a while, you just have to show that you're there for your teammate. And I think that was a good thing. It wasn't good that the Devils lost Kyle Palmieri for 17 minutes, because he's been one of the better Devils, certainly through the last four or five games. And that might have cost him a little bit, because you need him out there, but it was for the right reasons, in my opinion, for sure.
You know, Ken, yesterday the Devils acquired Louis Domingue from the Tampa Bay Lightning. And, you know, in 2018-19, he won 21 of his 26 games with Tampa Bay. And this year he's been playing in Syracuse with their AHL affiliate. Sounds like he's going to go to the AHL affiliate in for New Jersey. But what do you think that move does for the Devils?
Well, it brings a veteran, experienced goaltender in, because they don't really have one along the way here. And obviously, what I addressed a little bit earlier, the goaltending has been up and down and struggled at times. So Louis Domingue, who played extremely well for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Now, I know it's the Tampa Bay Lightning, and he had a lot of wins last year, and they were one of the elite teams, a record-setting year as far as the regular season goes. But I think we may see Louis at one time or another here in New Jersey from the standpoint, depending on how the goaltending goes and if it improves along the way. But you've got to do something and give your team a chance to win. And Louis Domingue, again, played pretty darn good hockey for the Lightning last year, so they wanted to get a little depth at that position. And we will see whether he gets a call-up eventually and gets into the net along the way. The Devils are hoping it's more of an insurance and the goaltending straightens itself out. And like I said, I thought Mackenzie Blackwood had a pretty strong game last night as well. So we will see in the long run here, but they've got young goaltenders down on the farm team in Binghamton, no real veteran experience. But if there was an injury even, or if something went wrong, and like I said, the inconsistent goaltending, that they didn't have a veteran guy that could come right up and give you a chance to win and give you that experience you need up at the National Hockey League level. And again, a lot to do with, I think, Louis Domingue, you know, probably eventually here deserves another opportunity. I think he was 21-5 last year, something along those lines. With the Tampa Bay Lightning, yet you don't have yourself a National Hockey League job.
Ken Danico is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ken is an analyst on New Jersey Devils broadcast. You also know him, of course, from his work on NHL Network. Ken, Taylor Hall, as we all know, is an unrestricted free agent at season's end. He's going to look for a price tag or a new contract that'll probably start with a 9 or maybe even a 10 in front of it. This week, he sort of got into it with the Devils' hometown fans, you know, commenting and expressing dismay with the fact that the Devils' fans were booing the team in the midst of their power play. How do you foresee the situation with Taylor Hall and the organization playing itself out over the next few weeks, months, and maybe towards the season's end if he still is a member of the Devils?
Well, first off, I think it was blown out of proportion, and obviously there's a little frustration. I mean, it wasn't so much getting on the fans, the fact that he was disappointed, because the team was playing really well, to tell the truth. They actually dominated a large portion of that game against the Tampa Bay Lightning. And the fans, from their perspective, I mean, they pay top dollar to come watch these guys play, and they're frustrated as well because they want to see some wins along the way. But I think that's just a combination of the effort was there, and Taylor was frustrated that they didn't find a way to win that game. So I think it will blow over, that aspect of it. And last night was fine, and Taylor scored a beautiful goal to give the Devils a 3-2 lead along the way. He's their best player, make no mistake, and they certainly need him. I know they've had great dialogue along the way. I don't think money here is going to be the issue as far as a contract offer. It's all up to Taylor Hall along the way. If, you know, he wants to test the free agent market, they have that right, and he wants an opportunity to win. And despite their record, and I always continually say it, this league, you know, I think they're as good as 20 teams in the league. The record has not showed it. This league is so competitively balanced and even that you got to find ways to win those tight one-goal games. You got to defend leads, and Taylor is a guy that wants to have that opportunity to win, like every player should, obviously. I know he respects Ray Shiro a lot, the general manager, so it will play itself out eventually. They're not going to lose him for nothing. I mean, I think there will be a drop-dead date eventually of, you know, here's the contract offer. Are you interested in being here long-term? And if not, then possibly move him certainly for some assets. You would get a lot of good ones. But I'm a big fan of Taylor Hall. He's a great hockey player, certainly. We know what he did a couple of years ago and having a Hart Trophy winning type year was he did win the best player that season and a surprising Devils team that made the playoffs that year. But he hopes they're going in the right direction. And from a talent perspective, they are. Do they need data pieces here and there along the way? Probably. So we'll see how that plays out. But I know he enjoys it here. And like I said, that was just a one game that things kind of snowballed where you're losing a lot of tight games. You're relinquishing leads along the way because you're in every game. And like I said, they've gotten points in the last 4 of 5. He just wants to see some wins as the rest of the team does and certainly as the fans do.
Ken, just final question for you here. Wayne Simmons gets his first goal of the year against his old team yesterday, and how nice was that to see him finally get the goal? He had 3 assists versus the Tampa Bay Lightning, but just how nice was that for him to get it against his old team?
Well, talk about the albatross off his back, because it certainly wasn't from lack of chances. Wayne Simmons leads the team in shots along with Taylor Hall. And has had many scoring opportunities. He's been snake bitten a little bit like the rest of the team about as far as getting a break here or there and trying to find wins, but he's played extremely well the last couple of games. He was engaged. He was physical, bringing the assets that, you know, make him most effective. And yes, he scored that goal right around the net. So I would think goals will be start to come a little more for Wayne Simmons, but really love the way he's played the last couple of games. And you mentioned the 3 assists against Tampa. And all those assists were around the net and, you know, boxing out and pucks hitting him and getting him to his teammates to score a goal around the net. So he's a guy that is an important piece for the Devils here. He's playing with a lot of passion, and the Devils certainly hope that there's going to be a lot more goals coming Wayne Simmons' way along the way here.
Ken Danico is a New Jersey Devils analyst. Ken, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. We'll see you next week here in Winnipeg.
All right, guys. Take care. Always a pleasure.
Take care, Ken. Thanks so much. When we come back, we look ahead to tonight's Jets game. They're in Vegas to meet the Golden Knights, a 9 o'clock puck drop. When we come back, we preview that contest. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve as part of Santa Lucia Pizza. Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Ken Bolkesim in Vegas has kind of been the same message after a lot of the games, that it's inconsistency and not getting through 60 minutes. Like, what needs to change to make sure that that starts happening?
Well, I don't think we're that bad. I mean, the 2 goals went off of people. We had a 4-2 lead. We were playing pretty good hockey, so I wasn't totally happy with the all game, but we were still good enough to win. So I don't think it's inconsistent. I think they got some hockey luck at the end off of Tatar's body and then off of Gallagher's skate. So what do you do about that, you know?
Vegas Golden Knights head coach Gerard Gallant, after their loss on Thursday night to the Montreal Canadiens 5-4 in overtime, a game that they actually had relatively in hand, to have staged an impressive comeback. Golden Knights 8-5-1 so far on the season, which is good for fourth in the Pacific Division, a very competitive Pacific Division so far this season. The Jets and Vegas tonight, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290.
Drew, name me one person that had the Oilers and Canucks at the top of the Pacific Division.
Very few people would have had that. The Oilers, of course, struggling a little bit since they got off out of the gates on fire, and the Canucks potentially without Quinn Hughes after he rolled his ankle last night in their overtime loss to the Anaheim Ducks.
And but Quinn Hughes is arguably the front runner for the Calder right now.
He's been very good. But we're talking about the Golden Knights right now. This Golden Knights team.
Well, I just wanted to talk about the Pacific in general.
Absolutely. You're entitled to.
I digressed.
You did definitely digress. I think this is going to be a bit of an ornery Vegas Golden Knights team, having lost that game on Thursday night. The Jets, you know.
Shouldn't this be an ornery Jets team?
Well, you know.
Pretty sure Drew's pretty ornery usually, too.
You're absolutely right, I am. It's going to be a fascinating response for the Jets. I mean, they obviously got the win last night, but it's a win with an asterisk. And you have to wonder.
Actually, there actually is no asterisk beside it.
I'm aware. You have to wonder how they're going to respond on a short rest, you know, flight into Vegas, back-to-back situation, playing against a Golden Knights team that is more talented than the Jets are. I think you're going to know a lot about this game within the first probably 5 or 10 minutes.
Are the Golden Knights that much more talented?
Up front, I wouldn't say.
But for generally speaking, with the injuries the Jets maybe
top to bottom, the Golden Knights are a more talented team than the Winnipeg Jets.
They have some injury in net, though.
They do have an interesting situation. We'll have Jesse Granger of TheAthletic.com join us in about 5 minutes' time to talk about their goaltending situation. Here's what happened yesterday. Garrett Sparks has been recalled from the Chicago Wolves on a quote-unquote emergency basis.
Yep.
Malcolm Subban was a full participant at their practice. Marc-Andre Fleury wasn't at practice. It was allegedly just a maintenance day.
Mm-hmm.
But we do not know, of course, obviously, why you would then use an emergency call-up for Garrett Sparks if it was just a maintenance day.
Because the whole point is that they had another guy practicing for them who's a local. So
they had their practice goaltender that every team calls upon throughout the season on occasion. So it'll be interesting to see who is the starting goaltender for the Vegas Golden Knights in tonight's contest against the Jets. We know it's going to be Lauren Brossoit for the Jets on the Jets net. He hasn't played since, when did he last play?
He came in for Hellebuck against Anaheim.
When did he last start? The last start of those back-to-back situations.
It's been probably like 3 weeks.
Yeah, the back-to-back situation where he played in, where was that, New Jersey and then the Islanders? Or was it the Islanders and then Pittsburgh? I can't even remember at this point. It was back on the opening road trip was the last game he started, right?
Pittsburgh.
Was it Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh.
Okay.
He played 60 minutes against the Penguins. So it's October 13th.
So he hasn't played, he hasn't started the game in almost 3 weeks' time, which is certainly.
Brossoit's only started, what, 4 games this year? Three?
Three.
Three. Yeah. So he hasn't played, a lot for the Jets as of late. So he's going to get the start. But the Jets' reaction to really the egg that they laid last night in terms of their performance, not in terms of the result, but in terms of the performance.
They should be rested at least.
Well,
especially Hellebuck.
They didn't have to skate much past their own blue line because the puck was in their own zone the entire time.
They didn't use a lot of energy shooting.
Yeah. Well, Drew makes a good point. You know, with this game coming so quickly after a game in which, Hellebuck was worked into the ground and the entire team was probably pretty exhausted after that game, right? But you get the 2 points, so that's all you really care about. But yeah, the Golden Knights have lost 2 of their last 3. We talked about it a little bit earlier. Very disappointing loss to the Montreal Canadiens, the Thomas Tatar revenge game, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, nobody calls it the Thomas Tatar revenge game.
Well, he's actually turned out really well for the Habs. So, the game against Colorado, I think Gerard Gallant and the whole team wasn't happy with this. That was a 6-1 game. So when you're talking about, this game, I mean, there's the history between these two teams, obviously going back to the playoffs a couple of years ago. But you know that the Jets are just wanting to get out with at least a point, hopefully 2 points. And it goes back to what we talked about earlier in the show with Jason Bell. I mean, if you're able, I think even if you're able to come out with 3 of 4 points, I mean, 2 of 4, that you'll take it. But considering that you have a Golden Knights team that didn't play yesterday and they're hungry,
as I said, ornery, because you could hear it in their voice.
Absolutely. They're not happy with losing 2 of the last 3. And they're trying to keep pace, even though, Edmonton has started to struggle a little bit. I mean, they're trying to keep pace with Edmonton and Vancouver in that division. So
Calgary's nipping at their heels.
Yeah.
As well.
It's going to be a very interesting game. Plus,
was Arizona. Arizona's 7-2-1 in their last 10.
Right. And you're going to get the boost with Adam Lowry, hopefully Patrick Laine, even though right now, I mean,
would you expect Laine to play?
It's probably 50-50 right now with Laine.
Would you expect him in the lineup tonight?
I don't know. Honestly, I really don't. I don't have it's hard to say because he's practiced, but, he left practice early the other day, so.
What's swaying it one way or the other, Drew? Like, there's nothing to indicate that he's any closer than he was yesterday.
And, right. I think the biggest thing for the Jets, and Paul Maurice has talked about this in his availabilities, is getting out in front of this kind of stuff. So to you need the points, you need the win. Patrick Laine, is a little bit fresh, and, he's missed 2 games now. So
remember, it was last year that Laine scored against Vegas, and that really got the ball rolling. Remember on his 18 goals
in November.
Remember that was the game against the Golden Knights.
It's November right now.
Yes, exactly.
So no, I don't know, but again, you have to weigh. This is a long season. You don't want to take a risk. So
right.
I think if he's prepared and he's ready, and they think that they're ahead of whatever was ailing him, then I think then he'll probably play, because of course you can use Patrick Laine. I mean, let's be realistic. Logan Shaw has tried to fill in. CJC's made his debut, but the fact
and
that
I imagine it would be Cease that comes out for Lowry, well, just because he's a center.
Yeah, I mean, right. Cease is going to come out for sure. I would imagine you never know, but I would imagine that they'd pull Cease, and then because Shaw's a little more experienced,
you go up the middle with Scheifele. A little Lowry, Gustafson.
Yeah.
Which is sort of how they, at least at this stage in the season, would have envisioned their four center.
And again, if Laine comes in, then you pull I'm assuming Shaw would come out as well.
That would naturally be. And then you sort of are back to your healthy contingent, you mm-hmm. know, of a forward group. Yeah. I think this is going to go one of two ways. It's going to be a sort of, I think, a repeat of what we saw last night in San Jose, where this Jets team, maybe their gas tank is completely empty. And as a result, it's going to be a firing squad for Laurent Brossoit, and he's going to have to do his part to keep his head above water. Or this Jets team is going to sort of find that intestinal fortitude to realize that the way they performed last night is inexcusable and it's unacceptable in the NHL. And this is going to be their opportunity to sort of punch back ahead of coming back on the road trip and facing the New Jersey Devils on Tuesday night.
I think the Jets are going to win tonight.
Well, put it on the board.
I know the odds are stacked against them, second game of a back-to-back and all of that, and you know you possibly don't have Laine again, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that win yesterday, they know that they stole one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they see an opportunity, and you know, maybe Marc-Andre Fleury doesn't play. We'll ask Jesse Granger coming up, but you know, Fleury, I think I might be mistaken, but I'm sure he's played almost every single game except for one.
Well,
one or two. He started all the games. So, and obviously, you know, Malcolm Subban, no disrespect, is not Marc-Andre Fleury. I mean, Fleury's a top five, top 10 goalie in the league. So maybe you don't have to face Fleury, who's been an arch nemesis of the Jets, right, Dave? So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Fleury has started 12 games for the Golden Knights. Oscar Dansk started one game.
Right.
And Malcolm Subban started one game. So
Fleury's played 90% of the games.
Certainly have run Marc-Andre Fleury. And we'll talk to Jesse Granger coming up next to see about the status of the Golden Knights goaltending situation for tonight's Jets Knights game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we head out to Vegas on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, hour number three. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio, 1290. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets, Game Day, the Jets, and the Golden Knights. You can hear that contest live on this fine radio station starting at 9 p.m. with Puck Drop, the three-headed monster of Bayak, Edmonds, and Munns with the call. Right now, I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. Let's head out to Vegas.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program Jesse Granger. Jesse covers the Vegas Golden Knights for TheAthletic.com. Jesse, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Our pleasure, Jesse. Let's start with the goaltending situation for the Vegas Golden Knights entering tonight's contest. You tweeted this, I believe, yesterday, that Garrett Sparks has been recalled on an emergency basis from the Chicago Wolves of the AHL. Malcolm Subban was a full participant in practice yesterday. Marc-Andre Fleury wasn't there. Can you shed any more light on what's happening with the Golden Knights goaltending situation ahead of tonight's contest?
Yeah, it's kind of a mystery right now. I will know a lot more in about an hour when this team is on the ice for morning skate. We assume there's something wrong with Marc-Andre Fleury, whether it's a small injury, whether it's an illness or something, just because he wasn't at practice yesterday, and that was right before Garrett Sparks got called up on an emergency basis. But we're not 100% sure it's Fleury at this point. I mean, Malcolm Subban has been injured in practice at least three or four times in the last couple of years here in Vegas. And he can't seem to stay healthy. So if he did have something happen during practice, it wouldn't be the most surprising thing. And the other thing is, Marc-Andre Fleury takes off a ton of practices. They obviously, I mean, it's pretty well documented how they handle his workload. He plays a lot of games for this team, and they've decided that instead of giving him more games off, they've been giving him more practices off this season. So when he was out of practice, it wasn't anything out of the ordinary. It's something we've kind of grown used to here in Vegas. So it's alarming for sure, because if something serious has happened to Marc-Andre Fleury, that would be devastating to this team. But at this point, we really don't know. All we know is Fleury played the last game against Montreal. It went to overtime. He seemed fine at the end of it. I went back and watched. I couldn't find anything that indicated that he was injured. But again, he wasn't at practice yesterday, so maybe there is something.
Jesse, as you know, there's no shortage of Manitobans to ask you about. Vegas has more Manitobans than any other team in the league. I wanted to ask you about Cody Glass. He scored his third goal of the year on Halloween, the disappointing loss to the Montreal Canadiens. But how would you assess his first 14 games? Because obviously this is the first ever Golden Knights draft pick, and the expectations are really high for him.
Yeah, he's been phenomenal so far, especially on the power play. You see, I mean, when he came out of the Portland Winterhawks, you expected to an offensive playmaker that's just really, really talented in the offensive zone with great vision and hockey IQ down there, and that's what he's shown. It's really showing on the power play right now because the play is kind of slowed down on the power play. Things get settled, and you see his vision, and he and Mark Stone have a really good connection on that power play, and it's led to a ton of goals. At 5-on-5, he started the year really hot because he was playing between Mark Stone and Max Pacioretty, one of the best lines in hockey. Eventually, Paul Stastny regained that spot in the lineup, and Cody Glass was moved down to the third line, where he hasn't produced quite as much at 5-on-5, but Alex Tuch played in his first game the other night, and those two looked great. Obviously, Tuch scored a goal. Cody Glass got one from Cody Eakin. So he's been very good. The 5-on-5 is still getting there. You can tell he's still catching up to the speed of the NHL. But on the power play, he looks like he's an NHL vet.
You know, Jesse, after scoring 43 goals 2 years ago, 24 last season, he's got 4 goals this season. Why should Golden Knights fans be optimistic that William Karlsson is going to get his scoring touch back?
Well, he's scored 3 goals in 3 games since I wrote that story about the goals are coming. I got super lucky on the timing of that one. He is a playmaker. I mean, even when he wasn't scoring the goals, it was, 12 games into the season, he only had 1 goal, and it was an empty netter. And he was struggling on the score sheet, but he was creating chances at a rate that almost no one in the NHL could match. I mean, that line of William Karlsson, Riley Smith, and Jonathan Marchessault has been phenomenal this season, and they create the chances, and now it's kind of Marchessault's turn. Marchessault's going through the slump. He can't seem to get one to go in the net, but they create a ton of chances, and I mean, the analytics say that if you create enough chances over time, eventually they're going to start going in, so I figured that was going to happen with William Karlsson. It has started happening as of late. I expect him to reach that 30-goal mark or be somewhere around there by the end of the season just because of the sheer volume of chances he's going to get.
Jesse Granger is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jesse covers the Vegas Golden Knights for TheAthletic.com. The Jets and the Golden Knights, 9 p.m. puck drop tonight, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. Jesse, it was about 2 weeks ago, maybe a little more than 2 weeks ago, that the announcement came out that Valentin Zaykov has been suspended for 20 games for performance-enhancing drugs or testing positive for PEDs. You know, the comments from Golden Knights president George McPhee after that announcement, I think, were pretty telling. He was, I don't want to use the euphemism that he threw the player under the bus, but he really was very vocal and very honest about their disappointment with Zaykov for testing positive here, almost saying that the player admitted to using, PEDs, which is not something that you regularly see. How does this situation play out when Zaykov is eligible to return? Is his future, numbered in Vegas at this point?
Yeah, and like you mentioned, McPhee's comments were a little shocking, and especially when you contrast them to the way they handled the Nate Schmidt situation a year ago, where Nate Schmidt, when he came out, when that ruling came out, the Golden Knights were 100% behind Nate Schmidt. They wrote in the press release saying that they believe in his integrity as a person, and that from everything they've seen, this is an accidental case. And then with Zaykov, it was the exact opposite. They didn't back him at all, and neither did the players in the locker room. So, I mean, there's the bad thing about all these PED things is we don't get much information other than what the teams tell us because the NHL doesn't release it, so we don't have a lot to go on. But based off of the way the team handled it, the situations were obviously very different. The other part of it is Valentin Zaykov is a bubble player who isn't a huge difference maker on your team. He barely made the team out of camp, and he's a replaceable player, whereas Nate Schmidt's the number one defenseman on your team. You can't exactly just toss him aside. Zaykov's future, to be honest, I would be surprised if he ever suits up again for the Golden Knights. This isn't anything I've been told. This is just deductive reasoning based off the way the team has handled this, based off of where he was in his career before this happened. I would guess that when this suspension is up, they unconditionally waive him from the organization, but we'll see.
Yeah, so you mentioned Nate Schmidt earlier, and he obviously returned after being injured in the first game, which you mentioned last year he missed the 20 games due to suspension. But how important is it to get him back, especially the timing? You know, the Vegas Golden Knights have lost 2 of their last 3 games. Obviously, they're right up there with Edmonton, Vancouver, Anaheim in their division. Most people expect the Golden Knights to ultimately win the Pacific Division. But just how important is it to get him back in the lineup for a D group that is still in flux?
Yeah, Nate Schmidt is probably the most important player on this team other than Marc-Andre Fleury, which is weird to say because they've got Mark Stone, they've got Max Pacioretty, William Karlsson, are all probably superior talented players than Nate Schmidt. But because this Golden Knights team has spent so much money on the forwards and the goalies, they don't have a ton spent on the defensemen. And while they don't have any individual star players on defensemen, they seem to play well as a group. But for whatever reason, when Nate Schmidt is out and these guys have to kind of all shift up one position and their defensive responsibility becomes a little higher, they really struggle. Nate Schmidt seems to be the piece that makes this team work, and I think it's largely because they rely so heavily on transition offense. This team, when they're playing at their best, they're scoring in transition, and nobody on this team transitions defense into offense better than Nate Schmidt. Not only is he good in his own end, and not only does he force turnovers, but when he forces turnovers, he immediately transitions it up the ice to those forwards, William Karlsson, Riley Smith, Marchessault, and Pacioretty, and it leads to offense, and they can score before the opposing team can get back on the back check. So he was a little rusty the other night against Montreal. I'm not going to lie, I was not impressed with his performance, but it's his first game back after a major injury, so it's going to take him some time to get back in there. I think he's going to be a huge part of this team, but yeah, they really, really needed to get him back.
You know, Jesse, as he mentioned, we're contractually obligated to ask about Winnipeg or Manitoba-based players, and with you guys, there's quite a few. So one guy who really, you know, of course comes to mind is Mark Stone. He was a big acquisition from last year. He was a guy that all, you know, every team would have wanted on their roster. How has he settled in his first full season now with Vegas?
He's been awesome. I mean, he leads the team in goals, assists, points, and he's one of the better defensive players on the team. He does everything. I think when he came out of Ottawa, he didn't get enough spotlight there because that team was so bad. And everybody knew Mark Stone was great defensively, and you hear about his stick and how good he is in the neutral zone. And he had some decent offensive numbers. 73 points is not bad at all, but his offense has really shined this year. Now he's getting to play with veteran elite offensive players like Max Pacioretty and Paul Stastny. He's playing on that power play, that top power play unit here in Vegas that's got a lot of firepower. And he just, it's pretty much a goal or an assist every single night for him. He's on pace for 100 points, and for a guy who has a 200-foot game like him, 100 points would be an absolutely brilliant season. So he's been really good. I mean, as good as advertised. They've signed him to that 8-year deal worth $9.5 million AAV, and right now that $9.5 million almost looks like a steal.
Last question for you, Jesse. Max Pacioretty is in his second full season now as a member of the Golden Knights. You know, last year you probably would say it was a bit of a down year with only 40 points in 66 games played. Off to a better start this season with 12 points in 14 games. Does he look more comfortable now in his second full season in Vegas than he did last year, given that he was acquired so late in the offseason last season?
You nailed it. Comfortable is the perfect word. I spoke with Pacioretty during the offseason, and he really talked about how, especially for a guy who hasn't jumped around, there are some players who have moved teams quite a bit in their careers, and they're used to it. Pacioretty, he was drafted by the Canadiens, and he was a Canadian his whole career and never really had to go through that transition. And then to go from Montreal to Las Vegas, it's hard to find two cities more different than those. And he was struggling with integrating his family off the ice and just kind of handling all of that. And then he had some injuries to deal with, which didn't help. So, yeah, last season, for his standards, was a poor season, and he feels a lot more comfortable this year. The interesting thing is the puck isn't going in the net for him this year. I think he's hit more posts than every player on the Golden Knights combined, and he's been robbed a few times by some great goaltending. He just hasn't been able to hit the net, but his assist numbers have been maybe the highest in his career so far, at least the pace that he's on. He's been passing it. Mark Stone's been kind of the guy finishing it on that line. So, yeah, I would say Pacioretty's for sure a lot more comfortable. If the goals start going in, he'll be really good. But right now, they're happy with his playmaking ability.
Jesse Granger covers the Vegas Golden Knights for TheAthletic.com in Vegas, the Jets and Golden Knights. 9 p.m. puck drop. You can follow Jesse on Twitter. He'll have the latest news regarding the Golden Knights goaltending situation for tonight's contest. Jesse, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks for having me, guys.
Take care, Jesse. When we come back, we talk about a very busy week among Central Division opponents. The Predators sign Roman Josi, the Blues lose Tarasenko, the Avalanche lose Landeskog, and much more. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Well, and to be precise, $9.059 million is AAV, of course. He wears number 59, the captain of the Nashville Predators, and I think, listen, it's not all about money, but I think there's a huge piece of pride here that Roman Josi now is the third highest paid defenseman in the National Hockey League behind only Erik Karlsson and Drew Doughty. And so that barrier was important.
TSN hockey insider Pierre LeBrun talking about the big news of the week coming out of Nashville as they sign their stalwart defenseman Roman Josi to that $9 million per season contract extension for the next 8 years. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Golden Knights coming up at 9 o'clock. Later, 9 o'clock Central Time tonight. What's that, 8 o'clock or 7 o'clock? I think it's 8 o'clock in Vegas time. They're only an hour behind us
right
now.
Tomorrow it's going to be changing.
For some reason, I always get Nevada and Arizona confused.
Because they're the two states that don't have daylight savings time, or they do have daylight savings time all year. They don't switch back, so that's the reason why it bounces back.
There's a two-hour and a three-hour.
Isn't there part of Arizona that is in the Pacific time zone, or is Arizona all mountain?
It's mountain for part of the year, and then I think it's Pacific for a different part of the year. That, you know, because we will, I guess, it's fall, so we'll fall back tonight. Set your clocks ahead, change your clocks, by the way, before you go to bed tonight. But we'll fall back, whereas in Arizona and Nevada, they won't move. So they'll move from 1 hour, from us being, them being 1 hour behind us to being 2 hours behind us.
So Vegas currently, since I always have it on my clock, you know, because I drop into Vegas as often as I do.
How many times have you been to Vegas? Like 30?
I've been in there, yeah. Probably not 30, maybe, but over 20.
The first time I went to Vegas was with you and
Dave has his own casino host. Except it's just for food. Dave doesn't gamble, so it's just for food.
No, we had a great time. What was that, like 5 or 6 years ago? We went to Planet Hollywood.
Yeah.
And Britney Spears was playing there.
Really? Playing slots or like performing?
She was playing the nickel slots.
Times were tough for Britzy at that point in time.
Yeah. Look, it's the craps that got her.
Yeah. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family owned and operated and has been serving quality home style food since 1985. For a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekdays and all day long and all weekend long, visit Bernstein's at 1700 Cordon Avenue. That is in the Cordon Village Mall. So Roman Josi gets his contract extension. It kicks in, obviously, next year. He'll be 30 years old when it occurs.
He deserves every penny of that.
So, you know, this is exactly what you sort of expected.
Oh, yeah.
Did you know,
Josi, to me, is a top five defenseman in the league.
Is this going to be one of those deals where, you know, the latter few years of the contract, the Golden Knights are going to have to hold their nose a little?
And by the way, I realize
the Predators, not the Golden Knights.
And sorry, I was just going to say, the reason why I say top five is I was actually having this argument with someone at work recently. I don't really think there is an undisputed number one defenseman. Like, you could easily say Sidney Crosby, Connor McDavid, Nikita Kucherov, those are one, two, three.
Don't leave out my Norris nominee who's looking like a lock this already.
Oh yeah, Long John. Yeah,
Carlson.
No, but that's what I'm saying.
Anybody call him Long John?
Well, I don't know, but I if you asked me to pick one guy, I would personally say Drew Doughty. I still think is the best defenseman in the league, but I think Victor Hedman is in that conversation. And you know, we're talking about Roman Josi here. I mean, you could almost say that he is still underrated, and that's probably because you've got Matthias Ekholm, Ryan Ellis, who's leading the team in points, and obviously you had PK Subban there for years, right, Dave? Mm-hmm. But Roman Josi, when you talk about all-around defensemen, right? Like, this guy is out there for 23 to 25 minutes a night. He's consistently around, you know, 45 to 60 points. And, you know, Nashville is a team that we talked about last week, guys, but Nashville's starting to resemble the team that we were used to a couple of years ago.
8-3-2 so far this season.
They've been really good.
Roman Josi, a key member of that team. I mean, you know, if you said, you know, who is this team built around? Well, it's been built around Pekka Rinne.
Yep.
It's been built around Roman Josi more than all the other defensemen. I mean, for a while there, it was built around Shea Weber, and then obviously he was traded. But
and Ryan Suter.
Exactly. And then Roman Josi sort of was the next natural progression.
The luxury of defensemen that they have had in that organization.
How many other organizations can trade Seth Jones? Like, that's another guy I would put in the top five.
The incredible defense that they've had it for the last 10 or 15 years in Nashville. And it just continues and it'll continue for the next, you know, indeterminate number of years when you have a guy like Roman Josi signed long term. Moving to St. Louis, big blow to the St. Louis Blues. Vladimir Tarasenko is going to be out for the next 5 months after undergoing left shoulder surgery. You know, the Blues are sort of, again, quietly playing very good hockey. The defending Stanley Cup champions. They're atop the Central Division, 8-3-3. How significant of an impact is this loss of Tarasenko for the next 5 months?
What about the fact that the last two Stanley Cup winners are both top three in the entire league right now? Like, nobody's talking about Washington.
Sure.
Nobody's talking about St. Louis because it's almost like you just expect those teams to be top teams during the regular season. But, you know, Tampa Bay has been a real disappointment so far, and they're probably going to make the playoffs. I think we'd all be shocked if they miss the playoffs. But, you know, when you're talking about
Jets in Tampa Bay 2 weeks from today, it's an afternoon contest that where the Jets will visit Tampa on the 16th of November.
Yeah, Drew, there's no doubt. Tarasenko, that's a huge loss for them. But, I mean, you have tons of depth there. So I don't think that this is going to fall off the rails and the Blues are going to miss the playoffs. But it's just really unfortunate for Tarasenko because, you know, we talked about this quite a bit last year, right? Tarasenko was a guy that internally the Blues were considering trading. Like, we know that.
Up until January 1st when they were the worst team in the league, Tarasenko's name had been bandied about as a guy who potentially, if they have to sort of overhaul the entire franchise, Tarasenko was the guy whose name was you'd heard out there.
Right. And so, Dave, you're able to kind of withstand a loss like that because you've got the Braden Shens and the Ryan O'Reillys and the Jaden Schwartzes of the world. So, you know, it's a good opportunity for some of the younger players like, you know, a Robert Thomas who's had a good year this year and he was obviously a big factor in the playoffs, or a guy like Robbie Fabry, you know, he's going to get more ice time. So it's opportunity for other players, but there's no way. Similar kind of, Drew, to Buff. Like, you're not going to replace Tarasenko, a former 40-goal guy. Like, there's nobody that you're going to be able to trade for to replace him. So you have to just move on, and obviously he'll be ready. I think he's going to be back sometime in March, so he'll be back for the stretch drive.
I guarantee, here's another guarantee.
Wait, we're going to be calling you Drew Mandel MD pretty soon.
No, there's nothing to do with his medical condition, but if Tarasenko, assuming everything goes well with his surgery, and he's back, you know, in a 5 month window, they're not going to bring him back until the playoffs begin, because that will allow them to keep him on LTIR.
Yeah, I know.
Use the cap space to acquire, a pending unrestricted free agent or somebody to fill that cap space. Then when you return him at the start of the playoffs, the salary cap doesn't matter anymore. Yeah. All of a sudden you have Vladimir Tarasenko returning to your lineup and you have whoever you acquire via trade. Again, this is assuming.
What is this, the UM Faculty of Medicine and Business?
Makes perfect sense. I mean, the Blues should do it. Take $7.5 million. You know, if things continue to go bad in New Jersey and if they can't come to terms with Taylor Hall, boom, trade for Taylor Hall as a rental, and then you have Taylor Hall and Tarasenko starting the playoffs in your lineup. That's not a bad way to go about trying to defend your Stanley Cup championship.
Hold on, when do the Blues acquire Hall?
I'm speculating. I'm feeding the monster that is the rumor mill.
This is another
discussion.
No, it's a good point. Basically, the Blues get a trade deadline acquisition for free, is what you're saying.
They can get Tarasenko back, after when the playoffs begin.
Right.
Assuming everything goes well.
I mean, that's a big if, and that requires a lot. You know, again, not to allow him to play for that long. I just don't see it happening. I know in theory, Drew, if it's very tight, like if it's like he was supposed to come back like April 1st and the playoffs start April 8th, then I think that's reasonable
time frame. 5 months. 5 months from the beginning of November, all of November, all of December, all of January, all of February, all of March. Boom. Comes back.
Hold on. Is it a leap year this year?
Not sure. I'll have to check.
No, it's a good point. I mean, but again, it's so subjective because some of these guys come back way earlier than we.
That's
think.
That's what I'm saying.
Right?
So if he's ready to go,
a good point. They're not going to rush him, and maybe if he's not healthy until mid to late March, maybe they decide to just bring him back for the playoffs.
But the issue I'm saying is that you run into is that if you make that acquisition, as you're suggesting, in February, whenever the deadline is, I don't remember the exact date, but whenever that deadline is, you make that acquisition, and Tarasenko is ahead of schedule.
Fine.
Well, then you're. I'm just saying. So, yes. Like, sure, in theory, that's a wonderful idea, but you got to be very careful with that.
Like, after this segment, should we all write the MCAT? Like,
well, hang on. You can't do any worse on the MCAT than you did on the LSAT.
That's true. So,
quote Dave's brother Dan: worst LSAT ever.
Not just Dan. I believe the testers. Just
I'm pretty sure actually when Eddie went to check his results, the result just said worst LSAT ever.
I still got points for writing my name correctly.
You did.
Right?
You did.
But you used the crayon, for God's sake.
And you spelled Ginsburg wrong.
When we come back, we talk about Alex Ovechkin and his quest to better Wayne Gretzky's all-time goal mark. Craig Button thinks he's going to do it. Do we agree with Craig? We talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Predicts that it will happen. Ovechkin will pass Gretzky at the age of 39 in 2024-25. What makes you confident that the previously unthinkable is now doable?
Well, number one, he plays virtually every single game. And when you look at the wear and tear on today's players, it's not the same as it once was. A very durable player.
That's TSN's James Duffy and TSN Director of Scouting Craig Button. It's a day of bold predictions, apparently,
Where was Craig doing that interview
from? I was just going to say, was Craig in the bathroom for that one?
Sounded like he was in like a shower or something.
I'm pretty sure they were doing it via Skype, and you know, maybe it got a little echoey. Maybe the soundboards aren't the acoustics in wherever he was.
Was Craig in a shipping container when he did that interview?
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290.
Obviously, we kid. He's a good friend of the show. Craig is the best. We're just joking around.
Thank you. We knew he wasn't actually in a shipping container, but I'm glad you clarified that. That we're part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN Radio 1290.
Rat Carney might put me in a shipping container after this show. I don't know.
The Jets and the Golden Knights tonight in Vegas. A game you can, of course, hear live on TSN 1290. 9 o'clock puck drop. Another late night, so get your coffee ready or do what I did last night and steal your kids' Halloween candy.
Do you ever drink coffee at night, Drew?
I drink coffee basically any time of the day. It doesn't impact me anymore.
I only drink it in the morning and like early afternoon at work. I don't know, something weird about coffee at night. It keeps you up too much.
I like coffee after a good meal.
But I have, yeah. You know, like when you're having some guests and you have a little coffee and cake.
Yeah.
Maybe put out a little sponge cake.
This is fascinating, guys. Like, really riveting.
How many kids did you get? We only got like 20.
We got, let me think. We had, I think, 64 individual bags of chips. I ate 62 of them, so we had two kids.
Do you do the full chocolate bars, the full bag of chips?
No chance.
No, it was a little bag of chips. I mean, I'm not made of money here, Ezzy. I don't know about you, but full bags of chips. Somebody's doing well for themselves.
No, we didn't do bags of chips. We did, you know, little mini chocolate bars. We gave out some of those fruit snacks. You've had like four of them during the show.
I appreciate you bringing those in. I do like those little fruit gummy things.
Well, they don't need to be at my house.
Well, there you go. So I'll be glad to give them a good home. This segment of the show is actually brought to you by a place that's much funnier than this conversation was. Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Remember, still to come this month at Rumors, Tom Green is going to be in town in about 3 weeks' time. And tonight at Rumors, his final night in town, I'm told very few tickets remain to see Derek Séguin. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com.
And of course, you got Rob Ross coming up next weekend for Halloween at work. I went as Bob Ross.
Oh, is that what that costume was?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Joy of Painting.
Yeah, no, I know who Bob Ross is, but that was good. That was a good costume.
Yeah, I usually don't really get into Halloween, so.
Yeah.
I thought it was a decent costume. I mean, all I really needed to do was, you know, get a wig and a paintbrush and...
Sounds like a lot of work.
Wasn't that complicated?
Yeah, we know Dave's more of a Purim guy than he is a Halloween guy.
He's a nothing guy.
It's safe to say he didn't dress up. I'm with you there, Dave.
I choose not to race.
In that case, let's get some poppy seed hamantaschen going here.
It's not quite Purim yet. You got to wait a few more months.
You can have it all year round.
You could, I suppose, theoretically. Alex Ovechkin, you heard from Craig Button off the top.
Oh, right, that's what we're talking about.
That's what the segment's about, yeah. You heard from Craig Button, rather, at the top of the clip, saying that he thinks Ovechkin's going to break Gretzky's goal-scoring record of 894 career goals. Do you agree with Button? Do you think that was once unthinkable, that somebody would break that record? Do you think that Ovechkin's going to be the man who does so?
Well, first off, I texted you earlier this week that I wanted to talk about this because to me, this is going to be one of the most fascinating things to watch. Also, you know, on this topic, how far Crosby gets. Nobody, we can all agree nobody's touching the points.
No.
Nobody is ever going to touch the points. We all agree on that?
Yeah.
Yes.
So when you're talking about Crosby, I think he has a really good chance of getting into the top 10. And, you know, I would assume, you know, he's not going to come anywhere close to 2,000, but, you know, he could probably get to 1650, 1700.
Get into the Messier area.
Yeah, and I think Messier is what, 7th or 8th overall?
Messier is 8th overall, yeah. With 694.
Right, yeah. Not bad. I didn't even have that in front of me. But when you're talking about Ovechkin, we talked about this, I don't know if this was 2 years ago or 3 years ago. We looked at, you know, Ovechkin's goals per game average, and we tried to see how far he could get. And I think I crunched some numbers, even though it wasn't very scientific, because I was basically averaging.
He did as bad on his GMAT as he did his MCAT and his LSAT.
Exactly. No, but what I was doing is I looked at it, and I kind of factored in that his goal scoring per game, Dave, would go down a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I think what I concluded was, again, not very scientific.
But I remember when we did this.
Right, and yeah. What I concluded was that Ovechkin was going to come close, but he was probably going to be kind of in the low 800s. Like,
yeah, 820, so, I think it was like 820. Something like that.
And again, my dad's the math professor. I'm just the guy that, you know, got a C in math. So when you're talking about, you know, Ovechkin, I think what he has going for him is that he hasn't fallen off big time. Right? Like, how many 50-goal seasons does he have? 7 or 8, and he's had 40 goals, I think, 10 times or 11 times, right? So when you're talking about Ovechkin, the drop-off, he's not going to score 50 goals, I don't think, 4 or 5 years from now, but he might score 50 goals for the next 2 or 3 years. So I guess the question is, if you're talking about 894 and he's...
Can he average 40 goals a year for the next 5-plus years?
Yes.
That's basically the number he's got at the target.
I think he can, and the big if there is, can he stay healthy? But he has remained healthy for the majority of his career. So, yes, he could probably hit 50 goals this year, next year. But then, you know, when he's 37, 38, 39, he's probably going to be more around 40 goals, just based on, you know, you expect a decline at some point. So, I guess to answer the question, even though there's no way of us knowing, I think Ovechkin is going to come very close, or he is going to surpass Gretzky just based on his average goals per game. He's already, I think, what is he, 11th or 12th all time?
He is currently 12th all time. He has 15 goals behind Timu.
So, I mean, he's going to hit 700 this year, guys, most likely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so he's on pace for about 55 goals this season. He's got 11 so far this year.
So if he averages 40 to 50 goals, he's going to hit 700 this year, and he'll probably hit 800 by, you know, a couple of years from now. Mm-hmm. So if you're already at 800 and there's a good chance a record that we never thought was going to be broken is going to be broken.
Yeah, you've hit it. The reality is we don't know. There are a lot of factors that will go into, you know, whether Ovechkin still has that drive to play. That, you know, whether the, you know, if the Capitals take a step back, is that going to impact it at all? But look, we saw after he had that 33 goal season 2016-17, I remember we probably did a segment talking about, is this the decline of Alexander Ovechkin, because he had fallen off from 50 the previous year. And then what did he do in 2017-18? He put up 49. Then he put up 51 last year. And again, like you just said, Drew, he's on pace for over 50 this year. So, I mean, all he does is score. And so if a number of factors continue to play out in his favor, mm-hmm. I mean, what we're ultimately saying is that this player has the talent to break a record that nobody thought would be broken.
Well, we heard from Craig Button off the top of the segment in that clip. The other sort of factors he said that go into his thinking that Ovechkin will break it was he mentioned his durability, talked about the prowess of his power play scoring. And we know that there's more power plays in the NHL, you know, game over game nowadays than there were previously. You know, he can stand there and hammer that one timer over and over and over again without any, you know, diminishing in his skills for the most part. He continues, and as you said this, to be surrounded by great talent, and as long as that continues to be the case.
Even if Backstrom leaves as a UFA, you've still got a pretty good center in Kuznetsov, right?
Yeah, but so they can't. I don't think they can let Backstrom go.
And I'm not saying that. I'm just saying there is always the chance, but he doesn't even play with Backstrom
anymore,
that. Right?
You just you always tied the two of them together for so long.
And because Backstrom has assisted on so many of those goals. What I think is really interesting, I was on quanthockey.com, which is a really great website. There's a lot of good references, HockeyDB as well. But when you're looking at goals for per game played, like average, there's only actually 5 players in NHL history that have averaged more goals than Ovechkin. You'd probably guess who the guys are. Bossy, Lemieux, a couple of guys from the late 1800s don't really count. Pavel Bure, interestingly, averaged more goals than Ovechkin. But when you look at the average goals per game, you could, every time I bring this up, Mario Lemieux, I still maintain, if he was healthy.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course.
He would be the one that ultimately had the goal scoring record, because he ended up with 690 goals in 915 games. So if Lemieux ends up playing 1,200 or 1,300 games, he probably has the record.
Yeah. I mean, he was otherworldly if not for the injuries that Lemieux, suffered. And then, of course, the health issues and everything else. But, it is sort of amazing to watch somebody like Alex Ovechkin and the consistency that he brings to the game year in, year out. And the goal scoring is fascinating. It's the health. Can you imagine being an elite athlete, going through the rigors that you go through on a game in, game out basis, and the fewest number of games you've played in a season,
72, right?
Was 72 back in 2009-2010. That's taking away the lockout shortened year, of course. But
which, of course, cost him some goals.
Which, of course, cost him, probably, what did he score that year? He scored 32 goals that year.
Yeah.
So that probably cost him another 20 goals, give or take, if they had played the full year.
I'm just saying, wouldn't that be interesting if he ends up falling short?
15 goals short.
In that vicinity. And you think to yourself, well, what would that have, what did that lockout actually cost him?
It would be interesting. I mean, it is going to be sort of an undercurrent or a story that you always sort of jump in at and keep your eye on over the next 4 or 5 seasons, as long as he continues to play at this pace. Can you imagine the madhouse it's going to be if he gets close, when he's, a goal away or 2 goals away?
And that's something we haven't really seen in baseball with the home run records.
Yeah.
And for hockey, like a major milestone record. I mean, can you imagine, to your point, Drew, how exciting that season will be when it's kind of like, if you remember the Timu, when Timu was closing in on Bossy.
Or when Gretzky finally beat Howe's record.
Yeah, it's like those major milestones are so epic, and the games become so much more fun to watch. So to me, that's kind of the chase.
Right.
We have nothing vested in Alexander Ovechkin achieving that record, right? But at the same time, the excitement that the league will gain based on him chasing it, I think, would be phenomenal.
No question. When we come back, Jonathan Toews has suggested a radical change to the NHL schedule. We'll talk about what Toews suggested. We'll talk about if there's a pie-in-the-sky chance of it occurring. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I know back-to-backs can be brutal, but it seems like the Capitals really travel in style. Why do you think NHL back-to-backs are more grueling than other sports?
Between the punishment of that they take on the ice and the frequency that they have to turn around, they're often getting into cities at 3 a.m., going to bed, and they have to get up and play again the next day, less than 24 hours later. A lot of aching muscles, a lot of bruised bodies. Makes for a pretty tough turnaround.
I know. Boo-hoo. Those millionaire athletes, they just can't catch a break.
Well, that was from a couple years ago, some sort of Sports Illustrated video featuring Alex Pruitt, their hockey writer, and another one of his colleagues with Sports Illustrated, talking about the difficult travel that the Washington Capitals had to experience. We know, of course, that the travel for an East Coast team pales in comparison to that of a West Coast team. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Very busy day here on the station. Still to come, Moose, Grand Rapids, Griffins. That'll take place this afternoon at 2 o'clock puck drop. And then, of course, later tonight, the Jets and the Golden Knights from Vegas. Keep it locked and loaded here all day long on TSN Radio 1290. Really interesting article in the Athletic.com, our good buddy Mark Lazarus, who covers the Chicago Blackhawks. It's called the Jonathan Toews schedule. And Toews had this idea of really sort of revolutionizing how the NHL goes about and schedules its games, adopting more of a...
Well, I thought it was like Jonathan Toews is getting a haircut, Jonathan Toews has a birthday party coming up, like his own personal schedule.
I don't know about that, but that was not a very good
joke.
I must have misunderstood the article.
Yeah, you must try reading it next time. You'll be a little bit better off.
It definitely helps.
Read it.
Yeah. He talks about how the NHL should adopt, quote-unquote, more of a baseball schedule, where teams go on the road. And say when the Blackhawks would come to Winnipeg, instead of playing one game in Winnipeg, they would play maybe 2 games in Winnipeg on back-to-back nights. So you go to a city and you spend more time in that city.
Yeah, real revolutionary. It's called the AHL.
Well, there you go. It's exactly your point.
I was going to say, it's so revolutionary. It's so crazy.
Hold on. Is the Toews schedule actually the AHL schedule?
I mean, it's the funniest. It's like, oh, we're doing something crazy. It's like, well, AHL teams have been doing this for years. Like the Grand Rapids Griffins are here for 2 games. They don't come in for 1. The Moose, when they go, and they always do a circuit. you know, and they play those teams that are, you know, I mean, I understand this is, would be a little different because unlike, you know, the Moose, for example, going to, you know, Chicago and Milwaukee and Rockford, mm-hmm. all teams within close proximity, the idea would be that you're playing the same team three times. The Blackhawks would play the Jets.
They, when, you know, that the Blackhawks, if they were scheduled to play in Winnipeg, if they're scheduled to play the Jets three times on the road in the season.
Who wants to see a team three times in a row?
Well, that would be what the NHL's argument would be.
Well, I think, Dave, you'd want to see teams in the same division against each other, right? Because you wouldn't see teams that aren't in the same division three times in a row anyways, right?
I think there's some, I mean, there's some validity to it, certainly, because it makes the travel on these players so much easier.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if you...
Getting onto that jet, it's real tough.
You know, but the time zones and...
And no more morning practices.
That's how you travel.
No more, yeah, well, that's true.
There was an interesting article on ESPN.com a couple weeks ago, and it wasn't about the NHL and travel. It was about the NBA and travel.
Okay.
And it said, basically, that the dirty little secret in the NBA, which is becoming more well known, is that a
big... people know it. It's no longer a secret.
Right. A big reason or a big factor in injuries are all the back-to-back nights. And I know they travel in luxury, and I know that the players travel in style.
I'm being a little tongue-in-cheek there.
But that, you know, that is really the next area of opportunity for teams in the league to revolutionize their schedule to make it easier on players to prevent... If it prevents injuries.
No,
and the science does prove that, you know, traveling, getting a better night's sleep and doing less overnight travel and doing less late night travel. And, you know, they're not saying do fewer back to back games, but just do them in the same city as opposed to having to travel from San Jose to Vegas and then playing in a back to back situation.
Drew, there's definitely legs to this. And you would hope that the NHL, the schedule makers, and there isn't just one, this is a full time job. I think, you know, most of us agree that, you know, this isn't something that's easy to put together. I realize, like, when you're talking about the Jets, right, two of the first 17 games are against the Central. That's something that's just kind of an aberration. That's not something that you usually see with the Jets, where they play so few games against the Central. So there's so many factors to consider, right? You basically, you know, you almost have to have a computer science degree to put these things together.
People who do these schedules do. And, and what makes it difficult, of course, is that the buildings are used for other leagues, and, you know, they're used for other games, and they're used for concerts and things of that nature. It's not going to happen, I think, anytime soon, but I do think that you'll hear more conversation. You'll hear the NHLPA bringing it up with the NHL more regularly, saying, what can we do to lessen the impact, especially if there's science behind it, and it sounds like there is, to make it easier on players, Dave.
Well, I was going to say, if you guys remember that anomaly, what was it, 7 years ago when Washington was here two games in a row?
That was during the lockout shortened year.
Right. So, like, I'm pretty sure
they lost both of those games.
They did. And don't you remember those were the critical games that had they been able to win, they probably would have been able to make the playoffs.
You know, you watch too much hockey when you remember two games from 8 years ago.
I was in Columbia, if I recall correctly, during those games.
Not with Pablo, though.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, so we do have an instance of it occurring here in Winnipeg where you did see those Capitals stay in Winnipeg, play two games. And again, we've seen it in the AHL for years where teams fly in because for a cost perspective, you just want to get it done. And again, there's a safety aspect of it for players' health. So I get it. But I'm just saying, like, I just think, like, it has to be nuanced. It can't just be,
The Jets and the Stars are playing a back-to-back situation this year where they play in Winnipeg, I think, on a Friday, and then they go to Dallas to play it on a Saturday. Instead, play both those games in Winnipeg or play both those games in Dallas.
And the question is, can you sell out two streak? I mean, it's probably. And that's the ultimate factor.
Exactly. Let's finish it off with cheers and jeers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something
surprisingly not good.
Dave Minuk.
I'm cheering. I'm cheering some of the creativity we saw in the NHL this week. Andrei Svechnikov going with the Mike Legg Michigan goal. I thought that was pretty awesome against the Flames. And then sticking with the Flames, Matthew Tkachuk scoring that game winner with 1 second to go in OT. One of the most creative goals you're going to see in your life. I thought that was spectacular. So the creativity in the NHL was on display this week, and I thought that was kind of cool.
Like that, Dave. Both of those goals were beauties. I'm going to cheer. You know, this is an easy one. We had Pascal Vincent on earlier, but I'm going to cheer CJ Cease, a guy who had a really good training camp. We talked about it before the season started. You know, a guy that you didn't maybe expect to get into an NHL game at this point in the season, but, you know, he gets his first NHL game, and his sister is there in San Jose, and so he's able to, you know, play in his first game with his family in the building. So that's something he'll obviously obviously never forget. So I'm going to give a good cheer to CJ Cease.
And on behalf of Dave and Ezzy, I'm going to express my condolences to the family of longtime NHL executive Jim Gregory, who passed away earlier this week. Best known as the player who used to, the NHL exec who would hand out a silver stick to any player reaching 1,000 games played in the league. And of course, also was responsible for so much of the second day of the NHL draft. Our condolences go out to his family. The NHL lost a fantastic representative and a fantastic ambassador for the game of hockey in Jim Gregory. That's it for this Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. A big thank you to our guest, Jesse Granger. We are joined by Ken Danico, Manitoba Moose head coach Pascal Vincent, and Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on tsn1290.ca. It's on our website, illegalcurve.com. It's wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, rate, review us, let us know what you think of the program. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappier Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Shauna Sword, doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.